Hello and welcome back to Triple R, right? What do you reckon of that? How does that work? Reflection brands, all the stuff. I don't know. Unless you try this stuff, you'll never find out. But hey, guys, welcome back. We're joined, as always, by Tom Gray. Well, I say as always, we weren't here last week because Tom was on vacation, and by Dougie Fisher, who's going to join me here in Canastota later this week.
That's right.
Guys, it's great to see you both. We've just had an action-packed weekend of fights, and we'll come to that in a minute. Before, I want to address what's coming this week. We've got Nonito Donaire against Naoya Inoue in a rematch of their epic fight of the year from a couple of years ago. Feels like a lifetime ago. Guys, there's a buzz online, and Tom, this is one of the reasons why we hastily got this podcast together today.
Yeah.
Because there is a buzz online about this fight. Are you pumped for it? I mean, I just saw the staff picks or the ring picks, and it kind of took a sting out of the tail because it's fair to say not too many people pick Donaire to turn back the clock one more time.
Yeah, well, basically, the way I'm looking at it, some of the panel members or some of the members of the people that are picking the fights were essentially writing Donaire off, which I am not doing. I did it the last time, and then I sat with my mouth open for 12 rounds. So while I'm picking Inoue to win, he's got a lot going for him. He's got 10 years in age, you know, he's 29 years old in the peak of his career. He's at home, he's getting against an opponent he's beaten before. I'm still, you know, picking a points win, and I've said I'm not writing off, excuse me, Nonito Donaire in this fight. I'll never write him off again because he's one of the best fighters of his generation. And I just watched the first fight moments ago before I came on, and, you know, he can hurt the monster with both hands. And he's always got a chance. He's very, very wily. And interestingly enough, what I'm thinking about is the pride, I think, in Inoue is going to try and blast Donaire out, or at least win, you know, much more impressively than they did the last time. And the last time we've seen that in a rivalry was when Manny Pacquiao went gung-ho to knock out Marquez in the fourth fight, more gung-ho than Pacquiao normally would. And he put his head in the chopping block and he got it taken off. So Inoue needs to watch himself here in this fight, but still favouring to win. I'm buzzing for that. I don't care what the 20-0 pick is. It's an absolutely brilliant fight at £118. It doesn't get any better than this.
So I purposely didn't say 20-0 because I wanted people to go online and have a look, and now you've so screw you, Tom Gray. I'm trying here. Hey, Tom, also, while I asked Dougie a similar question, right, just check your headset because you're sounding kind of, you're kind of a little bit distant. So just double check that while I So, hey, Donaire is 39 years old, right? His best days have to be behind him.
And that's ancient for a bantamweight, by the way. That's getting long in the tooth for glamour divisions, for welterweight, for middleweight, even for heavyweight. And heavyweights mature very slowly. But for the sub-featherweights, 39, that's like being four. Seriously, which puts it in perspective, which puts the talent and the career and the legacy of Nonito Donaire in perspective. He is incredible. He's like a Bernard Hopkins-level phenomenon, and that's what he really is. He's a phenomenon, and he was an athletic, dynamic phenomenon on the level of what Inoue is now. And has been for like the last, you know, 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, so what do we see tomorrow night then, Dougie? What do we see? Do we see a fight that's as competitive as the first one?
I think anything can happen. I think that's why everybody's buzzing. Mm. If you look at the matchup, okay, first of all, it's the two best bantamweights in the world. Inoue is Ring Magazine's champion, and Donaire, I think that's how you are supposed to pronounce it. Donaire is Ring Magazine's number one rated bantamweight. In rankings that don't have champions, they're number one and they're number two, but they're also the two best punchers in the 118 pound division. And they don't just deliver with speed and power. They deliver with accuracy, surgical precision. They know how to punch. They know when to punch. They know where to punch, like the old timers say. So it's the kind of matchup that's combustible. It's the kind of matchup that could play out to be a shootout. But they're both such good boxers and they're smart and they respect each other. If they don't respect each other, and they do, but if they don't respect each other outright, they at least respect that power. So we may not get a shootout. What we got last time, and it was a surprise to most people, was an elite level battle of attrition. But these guys are such complete boxer punchers. We could get anything. We could get a high speed chess match. We could get a tactical fight. We could get that shootout, depending on how the fighters feel or what happens early. If Donaire is able to catch in a way early, he might try to go for an early stoppage, because I don't think, you know, at age 39, he wants to do another 12 round battle of attrition. And obviously it's in Inoue's nature. If he hurts somebody, he's a natural finisher, and he's beautiful to watch when he goes about that. Personally, I think it's going to take a few rounds to warm up, because with the first fight, I don't want to say that Inoue didn't expect a good fight from Donaire, or that he didn't respect Donaire, but I would say he was a bit overconfident. I think maybe he had fallen in love with his power and he was headhunting. He was looking for that KO early, and that played right into the hands of the veteran.
Tom, my money, right, is on these guys picking up from where they left off. I think it's going to be bombs away early. What do you reckon?
I hope you're right.
Oh, no, Tom, I've completely lost you now. I've completely lost you.
You're on mute.
So, Tom, maybe take your headset off and kill that. I still can't hear you.
He's muted. He's muted. Yeah.
So,
I'm giving up the headset. Listen, this is just ring rust, you know, because we've not been on for a couple of weeks. I got the question. No, I foresee Nonito Donaire being careful at the beginning, Chris. I think he will expect a big onslaught from Inoue. So I expect Nonito certainly early to be looking to counterpunch. And because Inoue, I mean, he's got a terrific jab. That's one thing I picked up there when I was watching the fight back. His jab is tremendous. It's almost like a Larry Holmes jab. He's getting his front foot and his front knee into the punch to set up everything else. But he cannot resist letting go with the big right hands and the big left hooks. And Donaire on both sides, both flanks, was able to counterpunch off both those shots. So now I expect it to be quite, you know, not nervy, but I expect a bit of caution at the beginning, certainly from Donaire's side. He's a veteran and he needs to look at it like, I could be going, you know, into 12 round territory again here. He needs to watch his tank.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Dougie, I can't help but feel that the last fight that Donaire had was his Remember Me performance. Hmm. And that was, he cleaned out what was left in the tank in that last fight. I hope I'm wrong.
Right, I do too. You can only go to the well so many times. I will say this, if Donaire pulls off this upset, and it's not a huge upset if he pulls it off, but if he does, just in terms of history, that will be one of the most significant older fighter victories, you know, since, you know, Bernard Hopkins going from middleweight to light heavyweight and beating Antonio Tarver, or in his 40s beating Jean Pascal, or, Roberto Duran outpointing Iran Barkley. It's that type of performance if he can get the win.
Let me ask you this. This is topical based on some of the things that's going around at the minute. If Donaire wins, where does he go pound for pound?
He's in there. I think he's in there.
It would come in. It would come
Inoue's in there, and then you look at his body of work, and then you also just look at his recent track record.
Yeah,
exactly. He's coming off two four-round stoppages of rated guys.
And I'll tell you what, interestingly enough, right, the last time they fought, it was actually Inoue who was on the better form. You know, Donaire had Ryan Burnett had an injury. Fight after that, the guy who replaced, Zolani Tetti. I can't remember the guy that he fought, but he fought a late replacement in the semi-final of the World Boxing Super Series. Didn't look great, whereas Inoue had looked spectacular against Payano and Rodriguez. This time, if you watch Inoue's last fight, that was the most disappointing Inoue I've seen. And that kid that he was in with, Aaron Dupain, wasn't even meant to be in the ring with him. It looked like a dangerous mismatch on paper. Whereas Donaire is actually coming off a world title win and then a defense, two KO4 stoppages. So he's actually, like, over the last 12 months, he's coming into this fight on better form than Inoue, I believe.
Yeah, but I think with Inoue, you got to give these fighters a reason to really train and show up and show their best form.
I agree with that.
And Inoue is not going to get up for just anybody. He will get up for the Filipino Flash, a future first ballot Hall of Famer. And this time, I think he will you know, he'll enter the ring with the proper respect and focus, because I think when he entered that World Boxing Super Series tournament, his eyes were on Tete. Yeah, in his mind, he was going to be facing the South African in the finals, and he wound up with the veteran Filipino. And he knows now from his own experience, the veteran Filipino still has it. So I do expect him to be be careful, but to be on in the early rounds of this fight. But I don't think Inoue wants it to get into the late rounds either. And I think he's going to attack the body earlier this time. He's going to look for his own counterpunching opportunities.
I think he still needs to watch himself, though. And that's my only concern for Inoue would be, you know, in the crowd, let's face it, I watched the fight back in just like I say, just about an hour ago. And the crowd are very, very respectful. So there's no like, it's not like an MSG crowd or a Vegas crowd. They're very respectful, but I think he'll be so pumped up. I don't think the crowd will pump him up. I think his pride in his heart will want to blast the net out. He'll want to stop him clinically. And he just needs to watch how he goes about doing that, because the counterpunching of Daenerys still is superb.
Great stuff. So, guys, it was fascinatingly poised, that one. And as Dougie said, really at the top, you know, we could get anything. We could get absolutely anything. So it's fascinating. Talking of obviously pound for pound stuff that I mentioned earlier, there was a lot of action over the weekend. By the way, guys, you got anything else that you wanted to add about Filipino Flash or Inoue? Or
no, all good. All good on it.
I'm just looking forward to watching them.
Yeah, so me too.
This weekend, we had a whole bunch of action. Devin Haney has gone over to Australia, and he's taken all the belts home with him to Vegas at what, the age of like 23? And he's now undisputed and the ring champion in the hottest division in boxing. I mean, if a guy's stock's going to go up, that's the way to do it. Although that said, you can't please all the people all the time. How often do we see people say, oh, the guy's not using his jab enough, he's not using his jab enough. The guy used the fight dictating with his jab, and people are like, oh, well, that was boring.
Yeah, he only used his jab. Oh, no.
We've got to start appreciating these masters for hitting and not getting hit, right?
It's a good start for Haney, though. He had a great relationship with Eddie Hearn in fighting on DAZN and perfecting his craft, and especially last year, getting the right seasoning as a world-class professional. The 24 rounds that he went with Jorge Linares and Joseph Diaz Jr., I think it served him well going into this, you know, legitimate, undisputed, lightweight championship bout. He showed his poise. He showed his boxing acumen, his IQ, good jab. And he was able to get through 12 rounds without getting buzzed. He had been buzzed against Jojo Diaz, who's a natural featherweight, and was actually badly rocked against an aging Jorge Linares. So his question was a bit of a chin going into this showdown, even though George Kambosos is not known as a puncher and isn't really considered a world-class puncher. He's a crafty and quick-handed puncher, and he can drop guys like Teofimo Lopez. So that was a question mark. So he answered all the questions. And he answered them on a huge platform. I mean, this fight had international attention. And here in the United States, it was broadcast live on ESPN and ESPN Plus. So he had a huge platform for the first time. And I thought he delivered.
Tom, so that's an interesting point. Obviously, huge platform. You know, did he deliver in terms of giving the people what they wanted to see?
He delivered for the purist, but, you know, boxing fans that are more interested in, I don't know, just like, you know, the only fight they watch more than once is Gatti Ward or Rocky IV. You know, they won't be pleased with it. But, you know, I wrote halfway through the fight, there is no point fixing something if it's not broken. And it was up to Kambosos to do something, to stop him working off the jab and just basically tying him up and controlling him. He didn't do anything. In fact, by halfway through round two, Kambosos appeared mesmerized and stayed at a distance where he was guaranteed not to win. And that's on the outside. Yeah. There was no attempt to come in at angles. You know, he just stood there mesmerized. And, you know, I don't blame Haney. Haney, at the end of the day, has got his whole career on the line. He's been called the email champion now for, what, 2 or 3 years. And all that treasure's on the line. A chance to make history. First undisputed champion at the weight for 31 years since Pernell Whitaker. If you can jab your way to victory and keep it safe, you know, a lot of people are comparing him to Floyd Mayweather or the performance to Floyd Mayweather. There's actually a bit of Mayweather in there, but there's also a bit of Bernard Hopkins laterally in his career, where he would do all the correct things to guarantee himself a win, a perfectly constructed game plan, and not come off it no matter what the crowd said. Because at the end of the day, you make one mistake, or if Haney opens up with a big bolo punch and gets clipped on the counter, knocked out, people would have said, you get too adventurous. The bottom line is, he fought Haney, the way he should have to win.
Yeah, and on this stage in at Marvel Stadium in Sydney, which is Kambosos' hometown, he couldn't afford to get stunned.
No.
Like, he could be dominating around. If he got rocked or just momentarily stunned or a stiff leg, the judge, that gives the judge
the scores
to give that ward.
8-4 twice.
Exactly.
8-4 twice. These scores were miles away.
He had to be cautious. He couldn't afford to even get buzzed in this particular fight. And going back to what you were saying, Tom, it takes two to tango.
Yeah.
And we saw even when Haney fought Linares, who was dominated over 8 or 9 rounds, he didn't come on until the championship rounds. At least we saw with Jojo Diaz, Jojo actually made a few adjustments and had some moments late in that fight. Kambosos just couldn't do it. It takes two to tango. So if you're going to piss on the fight, you piss on both fighters. Don't just piss on Haney, because Kambosos talked a good game coming in. And I think he talked himself into just being stressed out. He was not able to get under Haney's skin during the buildup to this fight, during the days leading into this fight. And I would say by the time of the press conference and the weigh-in, he seemed pretty tight. He seemed to be the one with the anxiety.
Yeah.
So, Tom, if Haney can beat Kambosos realistically in second gear without really having to put much on, how good is the guy?
I think he's tremendous. I mean, when I spoke to Stephen Edwards for a feature on Shakur Stevenson, I looked into like a kind of Devin Haney and Shakur Stevenson fight. We were discussing that, and he said the Kambosos fight is going to tell us what we need to know. And I think we found out he's a diligent, terrifically talented pro. Doug alluded to it. The one question mark, I think, that I believe hangs over him is his chin. I mean, Linares can crack and had him woozy. What would Tank do to him if he crosses over a big left hand at some point? You know, that's got to be. But a fight, say, against like a Shakur Stevenson, I think both those guys would probably cancel each other out. We would love it, but again, the Ward Gatti fans and the Rocky IV fans won't like it. But, you know, I would love to see it. But in answer to your question, Chris, he's pure elite at the weight, and he's got all the gold now to prove it.
So, Dougie, what's the fight now at 135?
That's a good question. I would say, obviously, there's a contractual rematch, right, between Haney and Kambosos. Kambosos being the guy he is. He says he wants that immediate rematch. But let's just pretend that it's already happened and Haney did what he did on June 5. He does it again. The natural fight to me to be made at lightweight is Haney versus Vasily Lomachenko, the former champ who looked to have regained his elite level form in his last two fights. If he's available, if the crisis happening in the Ukraine lightens up enough to allow him to resume his career, or if he just makes that choice to resume his career, that's a makeable fight. They're both with top rank for the time being. And Lomachenko is somebody who is still in everybody's pound for pound top 10. So if Haney wants to take that next step from going from the best, the man at lightweight and the undisputed champion to an elite fighter, a pound for pound player, the best way to get there is to knock off a current pound for pound player and a guy who a lot of people believe is like a future Hall of Famer. So I would say for Haney, the most significant matchup is Lomachenko, but I think the most entertaining matchup would be something like Haney versus Ryan Garcia or Haney versus Gervonta Davis, because Davis and Garcia bring the power and they bring the huge fan bases. So you have a huge event.
Yeah.
Tom, two surnames. What's the pick of the lightweight fights for you right now? If you could match any two guys.
I like Tank versus Garcia, because for exactly what Doug said, you've got two fan bases coming together and a major collision of power. And that's not to be like, that's just for the spectacle of it. It's not the one, I think the one that means the most currently, given where both guys stand, is Haney against Lomachenko. But yeah, Garcia versus Tank would be a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, great stuff. Talking about a lot of fun, it was certainly fun for the Welsh fans on Saturday night when Joe Cordina made an emphatic statement in a 50-50 fight.
Wow.
And knocking out Ogawa in the second round with Dougie, the best shot of the year. Certainly. So
far. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's the definition of the one hitter quitter. And it's also just the definition or a prime example of boxing being the theater of the unexpected. I mean, I favored Cordina. He had the home, court advantage. He's the better talent. He's the better boxer. But I did not expect him to wipe out Kenichi Ogawa. Ogawa is nothing if not tough and tenacious and dangerous with his right hand. You know what I mean? So for Cordina to zap him like that, that's why we watch, you know, that's why they fight the fights. And the beautiful thing about it, weeks ago. Oh, am I back?
Now you're back.
You're back in the room. You said
the beautiful thing about Cordina's emphatic victory and winning by a one-punch knockout is that when Shakur Stevenson won the Ring Magazine junior lightweight title by dominating Oscar Valdez, what everybody was saying, myself included, is he has no challenges at 130. He might as well go up to 135 and throw his hat, put his name into that hat, which obviously makes a lot of sense. But it's also kind of disappointing when somebody establishes himself as the man of a particular division and doesn't stay on top of the mountain, doesn't stay king of the mountain and defend that title create a legacy there. So if Shakur wants to stick around, there's now sort of a world title holder that has some juice.
Yeah.
That people would say, hey, you know what? We knew that guy, the Welshman, could box. You know, we knew he was a good amateur. We know he has talent, but now we know he's dangerous as well. We're into this fight, and it's a further unification fight. So I like that. And they're already going back and forth respectfully on Twitter. I love to see it.
Hey, I'd love to see Bob and Eddie go back and forth on it. That's the only problem.
There's your prelim.
Tom, I'm going to be guilty of hyperbole here, but shades of Duran with that right hand, right?
It's not often I jump out of my seat, but you know, I was sitting watching it at home. Anson Wainwright was covering it live, and I screamed my head off. And my youngest kid almost had a heart attack, and my wife gave me a row. Yeah, it was that. It was just that kind of out of nowhere. I mean, it was the full. And I said I got a bit of heat on it because people are making out that I'm disrespecting Lee Wood's stoppage of Conlan. But you could foresee, you know, Conlan getting that late round stoppage. And even though it was spectacular, and you could foresee Wood getting the stoppage, even though it was spectacular and Conlan went out of the ring, to take Ogawa's full energy bar with one shot, the first huge shot that was thrown in the fight was just blew me away. For me, knockout of the year just now, and it'll be a damn good knockout that beats it.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Dougie, coming back over to the States, Stephen Fulton, he's now a guy who is, I'm going to kick myself for saying this, but he's knocking on the door of the pound-for-pound stuff. That pound-for-pound list, by the way, I'll say this, you know, I believe in pound-for-pound rankings, right? I obviously believe there's no real method to the madness as such, in the sense that everyone has their own criteria and that kind of stuff. But right now, when you look at it, there's probably about 20, 25 names in the mix, right? I can't remember it being so deep, but Fulton's one of those guys, maybe 10 to 15.
There's a bunch of guys knocking on the door. Stephen Fulton is probably number 11, right? If Ring Magazine's pound for pound rankings went from 15, you know, went from 10 to 15, Fulton's probably 11. At least he has that form. Now listen, he's a junior featherweight, so he's often overlooked because of that, right? All the buzz this weekend was focused on the lightweight championship fight in Sydney, right? It wasn't the spotlight wasn't in Minnesota with this excellent junior featherweight matchup. But it was a matchup coming in that it wasn't really 50-50, but let's say it was like 60-40 in favor of the Philadelphian. Danny Roman has been there. He's done that. Nobody's ever had an easy time with him, and Fulton had an easy time with him. Fulton basically, shut him out. Fulton boxed against Roman the way I expected him to box against Brandon Figueroa, but Figueroa, a giant for that weight class and a hard pressure fighter and volume puncher. And that's always going to be difficult for a stick and move boxer. But with Danny Roman, he's a little more plodding, a little more methodical, takes him some time to warm up. He couldn't get started against Fulton, and Fulton was dialed in and he was on a stick and move game. And when he boxes like that, he is very hard to beat. The fun thing about him is he is a Philly fighter, and sometimes he elects to stand and trade, as he did with his fight, fights against Brandon Figueroa and Angelo Leo. But that's three great wins in a row, good wins. Leo, Figueroa, Roman, it's enough to solidify his claim as the man at 122 pounds. It's not really a pound for pound resume, but he's getting close because of his consistency and just because of the skill and the heart that he displays every time he steps in the ring.
Yeah, sure. Hey, Tom, Dougie mentioned there, obviously, the history of Philadelphian fighters. Fulton reminds you of any other guys from Philly that you've seen over the years? Or do you think he's an amalgamation of some of them?
Yeah, pretty much, because there's so much when you mention Philadelphia, a lot of the time you think of like Joe Frazier, who was just going for your throat, or Meldrick Taylor, who didn't need to go for your throat but often would, even though he was a brilliant boxer. No, I think Fulton's his own man. I really rate him, but I think that we need to see him against. I'd like to see him against MJ and get full undisputed status, which is what he gets if he wins that fight. That would be awesome. But no, I think he's terrific, and I think his best years are ahead of him.
Yeah, Dougie, create his path now for the next 12 months. What's ideal for Fulton?
There's some political barriers, boxing business barriers for making this fight, but the winner of the MJ, the Ahmad Ali versus Ronnie Rios fight, holds the other two sanctioning organization belts. I believe it's the IBF and the WBA, while Fulton holds the WBC and the WBO straps. So if he can beat the winner of that fight and become undisputed, it would be hard to deny him that, pound for pound rating, that pound for pound recognition. But the super fight, the fight that, again, there are political boxing business barriers to making it to letting this happen. But in a way, if Inoue takes care of business against Donaire and doesn't see any more challenges at 118, and he chooses to go up to junior featherweight, obviously he's going to want a world title. He's going to want to be a champion. That's how Japanese fighters are. They're not just into making money. They want to create legacies, and they want to be champions. For Fulton to defend the undisputed championship against the Japanese superstar and top five pound for pound player, that's a great fight. That's a fight that would bring a lot of eyeballs to both lighter weight fighters. And the winner, obviously, is top five pound for pound.
Hey, Dougie, while I've got you guys, actually, you put something out. I can't, maybe it's the jet lag that's kicking in. I can't remember, but you suggested a Ring Magazine title fight last week, I think.
Yeah, it was. I proposed if Fulton versus Danny Roman was worthy of, because it was the number one rated junior featherweight Fulton versus the number three contender in Danny Roman, and I asked the panel if they thought that it was worthy of the vacant Ring Magazine junior featherweight belt, and unanimously they said no. Ahmad Aliyev has to be part of that picture. And some of them said, no, regardless of who's number two, I only want the ring title to be up for grabs when it's number one versus number two. They're ratings purist, I guess.
I didn't jump in to defend your argument because I was really sat on the fence with it, because I'm all for getting the titles out there. But not for the sake of, I would, I'm not saying like a one against a six, but one against a three, the stars have to align quite well in boxing for that to happen anyway.
Yes.
One and two,
Well, that was my point. 20 years ago, it wasn't uncommon for number one to face number two, because number two had already faced number three and number six, and number one had already faced number four and number five, you know, because fighters fought more often and they were less promotional alliances, exclusive promotional alliances with broadcast platforms, right? You had like here in America, you had the 800-pound gorilla in the boxing business, which was HBO. And HBO was just like, hey, promoters, bring us the best fights and we will cut the biggest check. Yeah. So it behooved even rival promoters, you know, like say Don King and Bob Arum, to occasionally come together, work together, bring their stars together in the ring. And make that money, and whatever happens, happens. So you would see number one versus number two more often, or number one versus number three. These days, fighters aren't fighting that often. And if a fighter's with a certain promoter, that means, generally speaking, he's exclusive to a certain platform, be it DAZN, Showtime, ESPN, right? So it's really difficult. And the way I see it, and why I would have been okay if the Ring Magazine Junior Featherweight Championship was up for grabs in Fulton, Roman, is, you know, if you would have asked me who wins that fight, and I love Danny, he lives out here, I see him all the time, he's a great guy, but I didn't give Roman hardly any chance to win that fight. I was just thinking Fulton is going to win that fight, and Fulton is going to go on to win a lot of fights. Anybody he faces at 122 pounds. Eventually, if that fight didn't prove that he's the man in the division, his next fight or his fight after that would. So why not crown him now?
And that, we did the same with Annoy and Rodriguez.
We did the same with Stevenson Valdez. Yeah. We knew Stevenson was going to win that. And we know ain't nobody at 130 beating Stevenson. Mm-hmm. We don't think. I mean, but if you know, nobody's going to say, you know, Stevenson's not the real champion at junior lightweight. You know, it's like, no, dude, he is heads and shoulders above everybody.
Do you know what this shows me, Tom, is that if that fight was for the Ring title, right, how much stock it does add to a fighter. And I'm not being a shill for Ring here.
It's true, though.
Was the Ring Magazine champion coming out of that. That kind of makes him a clearer number one in the minds of a lot of boxing fans.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I'm on the same fence as Doug. And as much as they can say, I mean, a lot of the panel, you know, need the number one to fight a Tyrannosaurus Rex in order to justify in their mind the Ring title being at stake. But what that leads to is exactly what you've got, which is seven vacant championships in the men's division and the men's divisions. And I think that's starting to get pretty pointless for all the reasons that Doug's just illustrated in terms of promotional allegiance and broadcasting or streaming allegiance. It prevents these fights getting made, and the downside of that is these Ring championships not being in circulation. And you can turn around and say, I mean, someone in the panel was making out like it's like the lost ark, but that's the problem. It is lost, you know, and if you don't get them out there, I think that's a problem. And I'm open, this is a totally different conversation, we'll address it another time, but I'm open to slight changes coming in that stops there being so many vacant championships there.
Right, guys, we've got a couple of minutes left, so we're going to have to go quickly through these last rants. Dougie, you got like 20 seconds. The rematch, Haney Kambosos, is the fight to make at 135.
It is the fight to make at 135 because it's a huge event. It would take place in Sydney again. Kambosos having had the prize and losing it, he's going to be hungrier. He's going to be more. He's going to be more dialed in, but he's not going to let it get to his head. And he's a better fighter when he's the underdog and when he's counted out. So it's going to be a better fight.
Tom, I'm not buying that, but Tom, Dougie Fisher has already been inducted into One Hall of Fame. I know he's only coming here as a guest this week, but let's block Dougie Fisher from getting into any more Halls of Fame because the dude hasn't paid his dues.
What? Right, okay. Doug, at the end of the day, you know, I think he's starting to get a bit, because he's been inducted into One Hall of Fame, he's kind of up himself now. So it's like, I don't need to pay these dues. Let Tom Gray over in Motherwell pay his dues. He can pay my dues. So he's essentially up himself. He's needing to basically come back down to earth and start being the editor we once loved.
Okay. And time. Guys, I think that was great. That was a lot of fun. Dougie,
who won it?
Who
won?
Tom. It's a split decision. It's a majority draw. Sorry, guys. We'll be back next week. All right, guys.